गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि गो मैत भक्त वृंद की जय। आ गौ श्री समुद्रवती, आ गौ श्री समुद्रवती, आ गौ श्री समुद्रवती, आ गौ श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग। नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 8 द स्टोरी ऑफ पिंगला टेक्स्ट 22 through 32 synonyms pingala nama of the name pingala vaishya a prostitute asit there was videha nagare in the city named videha pura in the past, tasyaha, from her, noi, by me, shikshitam, what was learned, kinchit, something, nibodha, now you learn, nripa nandana, O son of kings, pingala nama vaishyasi, Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nipanandana Pingala nama vaishyasi Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nirpanandana Pingala nama vaishyasi Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nirpanandana
Pingala nama vaishyasi Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nirpanandana
Pingala nama vaishyasi Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nirpanandana
Ladies
Pingala nama vaishyasi
Videha nagare pura
Tasyame shikshitam kinchin
Nibodha nirpanandana Pingala nama vaishyasi Videha nagare pura Tasyame shikshitam kinchin Nibodha nirpanandana
translation. O sons of kings, previously in the city, son of kings, previously in the city of Videha, there dwelled a prostitute named Pingala. Now please hear what I have learned from that lady. Om jnana timanandasya jnananjana shalakaya chukchudan militam nena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We have lots of verses today and several purports, so I'm just going to work my way through them. We can chant together the next one. Sa svarinye kadatantam sankheta upanishiti abhukale bahidvare vibrati rupam uttamam. Once that prostitute, desiring to bring a lover into her house, stood outside in the doorway at night, showing her beautiful form. Uttamam rupam is the Sanskrit. Next verse. Marga agachyato vichya purushan purusharshadha tan shoka dan vitatvata tan tan meneta kamuki. O best among men, this prostitute was very anxious to get money, and as she stood on the street at night, she studied all the men who were passing by, thinking, oh, this one surely has money. I know he can pay the price, and I'm sure he would enjoy my company very much. Thus she thought about all the men on the street. The Sanskrit here for customers, it says kantan, kanta, like Radha Kanta and Gopi Kanta, name for Krishna. So kanta means lovers. We'll see some purport about that coming up, why this particular word is used. Next two verses. Agateshva payateshu satankheto pajivani apyanyo vittivankopi namu paisati bhurita evandura shayadvasta Nidradvaya valambati nyagachanti pravishati nishidham samapadyata. As the prostitute Pingala stood in the doorway, many men came and went, walking by her house. Her only means of sustenance was prostitution, and therefore she anxiously thought, maybe this one who is coming now is very rich. Oh, he is not stopping, but I am sure someone else will come. Surely this man who is coming now will want to pay me for my love, and he will probably give me lots of money. Thus, with vain hope, she remained leaning against the doorway, unable to finish her business and go to sleep. Out of anxiety, she would sometimes walk out toward the street, and sometimes she went back into her house. In this way, the midnight hour gradually arrived. Text 27. Tasya vitta shaya sushyad patravadina chetasah nirvedha paramo jagya chintahetu sukhavah. As the night wore on, the prostitute, who intensely desired money, gradually became morose, and her face dried up. Thus being filled with anxiety for money and most disappointed, she began to feel a great detachment from her situation, and happiness arose in her mind. Purport. It appears from these verses that on this particular night, the prostitute Pingala was not at all successful in attracting customers to her house. Being completely frustrated and disappointed, she gradually became indifferent to her situation. Thus, great suffering sometimes leads one to the path of enlightenment. For according to a Sanskrit proverb, disappointment gives rise to the greatest satisfaction. The prostitute had dedicated her life to satisfying the lusty desires of many men. Engaging her mind, body, and words in the service of paying lovers, she completely forgot the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus her mind was most unsteady and disturbed. Finally, being completely frustrated, her face and throat drying up, she began to feel indifferent to her situation, and happiness arose in her mind. This is the main lesson that we learn from this story of Pingala, how when you give up hope for material enjoyments, that's a good thing. You can start being happy. This story, Pingala is mentioned a couple of places in our books earlier, in a chapter called The Song of the Bee, and Radharani is talking to the bumblebee. Uddhava is delivering a message to the gopis. So the gopis are, of course, pining for Krishna's association. But at one point they say, oh, we might as well do, what hope do we have? We don't really have any hope. Krishna's enjoying with these city women. He has so much opulence. Well, he doesn't need us. Better just to give up hope. If we just give up hope, then we have some chance for some peace and happiness. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also refers to Pingala during one of his ecstasies in the Anchalila, speaking in the mood of the gopis. Prabhupada, he just mentions the word, he doesn't elaborate on Pingala, but he mentions Pingala's name. And the, actually in the Bhagavatam, the Sanskrit there is Padam Saukhyam Himairasyam Swarim Yapi Aha Pingala. And there it's translated as, that's 10:47:47. The greatest happiness is to renounce all desires. This, the Sanskrit word is nairasyam, which is translated in a word for word as indifference. And in Srila Prabhupada, in his little short purport, where Lord Chaitanya mentions Pingala in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada paraphrases what the gopis are saying. And as Bhim Prabhupada's words, utter hopelessness is the greatest happiness. That's the way the gopis are thinking. If we give up hope, then we'll be happy. Otherwise, there's no chance. So text 28. Tasya nirvinna chittaya gītam śrinu yukha mama nirveda āśya pāśanam purushasya yukha yasi. The prostitute felt disgusted with her material situation and thus became indifferent to it. Indeed, detachment acts like a sword, cutting to pieces the binding network of material hopes and desires. Now please hear for me the song sung by the prostitute in that situation. Purport: the network of material desires is created when one falsely thinks that he can establish himself permanently in the material world. This binding network should be cut by the sword of detachment. Otherwise, one will be forced to wander in the illusory network of Maya with no understanding of liberated life on the spiritual platform. 29. Nahyanga jata nirvedo devandam jihasati yatat jnana rahito manujo mamatam nipa. O King, just as a human being who is bereft of spiritual knowledge never desires to give up his false sense of proprietorship over many material things, similarly, a person who has not developed detachment never desires to give up the bondage of the material body. Next 30. So this is the beginning of her prayer, called a prayer. Pingala vācha ahame mohavitatim pasyata vijitātmana yākāntāra satakāmam kāmayena bālisha. The prostitute Pingala said, just see how greatly illusioned I am. Because I cannot control my mind, just like a fool, I desire lusty pleasure from an insignificant man. Purport: in material existence, all of the senses are attracted by different objects, and thus the conditioned soul becomes a first-class fool.
The cause of material life is one's indifference to the absolute truth. The conditioned soul considers himself to be the lord and enjoyer of the material world and considers the purpose of life to be sense gratification. The more one tries to enjoy the material world, the more one's illusion increases. It appears from this verse that the prostitute Pingala was not only earning her livelihood through prostitution, but was actually enjoying her illicit contact with innumerable men. Actually enjoying her illicit contact with innumerable men. The words kan pad asita, so this is this word again, kanta, and asita means, how's it probably translated here, useless. A useless lover, kantat, from a useless lover, kantat asita. The words kantat asita indicate that she was freely selling herself without discrimination to the most ordinary and useless men, considering them to be lovers. Thus she says, I was a great fool. The word Bali Shah means one who has a childish mentality without practical experience of right and wrong. So she's categorizing herself with that word, Bali Shah. Of course, that could be used for the man as well. So a couple of interesting sentences here, I thought, this idea, first of all, but as soon as the sense, because the senses are attracted to material objects, the conditioned soul thus becomes a first-class fool. So they're interesting, two parts of the sentence. this idea, just because we're attracted, then we become fools. Why? Because the attraction pulls us there, into that realm of ignorance, foolishness. We follow the senses. Instead of staying within ourselves, you might say our real self, our understanding of ourselves as eternal servants of Krishna, as soon as we go out, pursue what the senses are attracted to, then it's just foolishness. We look at this material world and we see what people are pursuing, and often, from our perspective, of course we have our own foolishness, but often it's a lot easier to see in other people what foolish desires these people have. People have all kinds of attractions to things that for us often seem very insignificant and a waste of time. And so much effort goes into it. Of course, here we're talking about prostitution. It seems like a theme that's run through a lot of these lessons have to do with the attraction between men and women and the whole game of love that goes on in the material world. So that, of course, we can see, even an ordinary person you could talk to doesn't have any spiritual inclination at all. It seems like you could point out how you have to see that there is some kind of illusion is going on here. Because when you think of course, we give, graphic examples of what the body is made of. So why are you so attracted to this? It's skin and blood and guts and hair and all these horrible things. If I were to give you a handful of each, you'd be disgusted. But somehow, obviously it's an illusion to think that this is so beautiful. And just the way it's packaged, of course, that's what it's all about, the packaging. Because we know in sales, packaging is so important. I needed some new earphones for my iPod. So I went to Walmart, and all the expensive ones have this really expensive packaging. But they have some of the tips are different. They don't work right on the iPod. So I was looking around, I couldn't find it. Then finally, at the very bottom, in a little plastic bag for $1, were the earphones that I was looking for. So the cheapest packaging, the cheapest thing is in there. But they try to make things look nicer just by putting all this fancy packaging in them. So this body, of course, the way it's packaged, and even one little thing is wrong. The difference between a beautiful woman and an ugly woman is, her nose is a quarter of an inch too far to inside or something, and she's not beautiful anymore. So one little crease in the package in the wrong place. So you can see, wow, it's such an illusion. What difference does it make if her nose is a quarter of an inch to one side or not? By the way, it makes a huge difference, actually. You don't get on the cover of Cosmo if that's what if your nose is a quarter of an inch to one side or the other. So it's obviously such an illusion, and to give so much to that And what is it all about? The whole theme that's running through this is hope for material enjoyment. Actually, so much of those, what goes on with the pursuit of man pursuing women, and women pursuing men, especially from the men's side, I think, because men want conquest. And we find that there are men who, you know, they want to keep score of all their conquests, especially young men. And as soon as they play a whole game, and they see this woman, and they want to be intimate with this particular woman, and as soon as that's done, then they have no use for them anymore. Now I know her, in a biblical sense. Now I know her. Now it's no fun anymore. No more excitement. Just like people who have serial monogamous, they tell them, you know, they have marriage over and over and over again. This happens both to men and women. Because the excitement wears out. Because so much of the allure is the mystery of it, you might say. So what is it about? It's about hope. But then the hope fails. It doesn't. It's never satisfied. Now I have to hope for somebody else. Another man comes by. Just like the criminal when she's watching all these men go by. Oh, maybe him, maybe him. Oh, not him. Of course, this reminds us of Raghunath Das Goswami, right? At the Jagannath Temple. He's thinking, oh, maybe this Pujari is the one. Oh, he didn't give me anything. Or maybe that one. He was nice to me yesterday. He gave me some good prasadam. So he's just thinking, oh, I'm just like a prostitute standing here, you know, looking for the person who's going to satisfy my desire, satisfy my tongue. So he stopped doing that. So that's what we do with our senses. They make us foolish. They make us crazy. Then there's, they go on here in this purport. The conditioned soul considers itself to be the Lord, or the cause of material life is one's indifference to the absolute truth. So this is about, the idea is that if we become indifferent to sense gratification, then we're on the right, then get on the path, you can say. Once you turn your back to the other path, become indifferent to it. I'm not going to pursue that anymore. I'm not interested anymore. Then you're back on the path to the absolute truth. But it's, if it works the other way, when you're indifferent to the absolute truth, then you get into this foolishness, this complete illusion of material life, where you give your blood for the most insignificant things. A real illusion, actually. Mirage. It's all a mirage. There's nothing there substantial. So next verse, text 31. Santam samipe ramanam rati padam vitya pradam vitya nimam vihaya akhanadam bhuta bayajishopa mahatadam tuchya maham bhajaya. Here's a familiar word, tuchya, insignificant. Goswami's had all this opulence and position, and they thought it's just insignificant. Let's see, how's it translated? Oh, tuchya, most insignificant, yes. So a translation. I'm such a fool that I have given up the service of that person who, being eternally situated within my heart, is actually most dear to me. Of course, the striking thing here is that she's a prostitute, but she's a devotee. Now she's remembering, you might say. Because it's always, I know, like, in the Bhagavatam, whenever I come to that chapter, Krishna's returning to Dwarka. So it's said there that hundreds of things, you know, well-known prostitutes were among the entourage coming to greet Krishna. So first you think, prostitutes in Dwarka? What? And there's hundreds of them, and they're well-known to And they actually have a position in the order of all the people who are coming. So it's always a having. Of course, Prabhupada's answer was, well, men always want prostitutes, so prostitutes are part of Vedic culture. We might tend to think, well, not in Dwarka. I mean, okay, somewhere else maybe, but in Dwarka, Christian city. But we see that even in Dwarka, of course, there, just like there's, I think it's in the pastime of, isn't it the Shaman Taka Jewel, where some of the residents of Dwarka, they had unfavorable thoughts about Krishna. They thought he might have killed Prasena, or he was involved in the plot somehow. So these are the Dwarkavasis living there. Why they're there? I'd make the story more interesting, add a little spice. I'm not sure. So of course we also know that in some ways, where Krishna, when he descends, It's kind of like the material world. It looks like the material world, so it has to have all the aspects of the material world. So this is part of the material world. You have people like this, you have prostitutes and so on. You have the whole culture that Krishna just entered into. That's conference I'm on, and into there was some discussion recently of what it means that Krishna brings his bond with him. Like when Vrindavan and Mathura, and all the same buildings there that we see today, doesn't seem like that exactly. So what exactly comes with Krishna? What is Mathura Dham or Vrindavan Dham? Of course, now Dwarka's in the ocean. But to say that his Dham comes, of course, I suppose one simple answer is that the spiritual brings his spiritual Dham and we see the material. But that's always the case. There seems to be a distinction when Krishna himself comes personally for his manifest Leela, but he also manifests his Dham. So what Dham is he exactly presenting? Even Lord Chaitanya, he comes with his Dham. So that he is 16th century Bengal eternally existing in Goloka Vrindavan? Kind of hard to make sense of this, how this works exactly. In any case, that this made me think of this idea in Dwarka, they're actually prostitutes, and they're devotees also. That's the other thing the Prabhupada would say. We have several examples. Of course, we have Chintamani. She was also a devotee. She became a Dwarka Pradarshika Guru of Bhavanangal Thakur. So she's thinking now in this devotional way, I'm such a fool that I've given up the service of that person who, being eternally situated within my heart, is actually most dear to me. That most dear one is the Lord of the universe, who is the bestower of real love and happiness and the source of all prosperity. Although he is in my own heart, I have completely neglected him. Instead, I have ignorantly served insignificant men who can never satisfy my real desires and who have simply brought me unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion. Quite a list there. Unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion. That's what we get when we turn away from Krishna and pursue satisfaction in material relationships. Purport, Pingala laments that she chose to serve most sinful, useless men. She falsely thought they would bring her happiness and neglected to serve the actual Lord of the heart, Krishna. She could understand how foolishly she had struggled for money, not knowing that the Supreme Lord is always inclined to award prosperity to his sincere devotee. The prostitute was proud of her ability to please men, but she now laments that she did not try to please the Supreme Lord by loving service. The Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the transactions of the material world. Lord Krishna is the actual enjoyer of everyone and everything, but one must learn how to please the Lord by pure spiritual service. This also reminds me of the talk of Rukmini and Krishna, where she's saying other women are going after men with their beards and whatever she says about them. I don't remember. I remember the beards part. Beards and mustaches. So the grotesque material body, but I am attracted to you. I want to serve you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Satchinananda Rupam. So finally, text 32. Ohomatma paritapito rupa sankhya vrityati vidharya vartaya strayam nirajya dhatrisho nasotya Oh, how I have uselessly tortured my own soul. I have sold my body to lusty, greedy men who are themselves objects of pity. Thus practicing the most abominable profession of a prostitute, I hoped to get money and sex pleasure. Vittam and money and ritim, sex pleasure, atmana with my body, ichyati desiring. Purport, the art of prostitution is based on awakening the enjoying propensity in men. Apparently this prostitute was so foolish she maintained a romantic conception of her profession and was actually trying to enjoy loving affairs with her customers, not realizing that they were lowest of men with the most abominable motives. Like the prostitute Pingala, one should understand that by giving up the devotional service of the Lord, one simply becomes a victim of the illusory energy and suffers greatly. She maintained a romantic conception of her profession. I think that's generally not the case with prostitutes, at least today. Of course, many of them today, it's not at all levels. I don't want to get into a whole discourse on prostitution, but many of their street workers and then they're the high class ones. Even the word I was thinking of, the word prostitute, that's kind of a mediocre word, right? Escort is a little more dignified. Now, of course, the escorts, most states, the prostitution is not legal, so an escort is supposed to just escort. There's not supposed to be a sexual relationship there, but everybody knows there is. So the high-class escorts, who can charge some thousands of dollars for one night, so they're then a prostitute, right? Then, of course, then you get the lower terms, like whores and hookers and that kind of language, which usually you think of the woman on the street trying to have, you know, enticing men because she needs a hair and fix or whatever, for the most low position in society. But it's all, of course, centered on the same thing, turning away from Krishna and pursuing it one way or another. It's all disgusting and ugly from the transcendental perspective. Whatever we're chasing after in this material world, is it Kulashekhar Yamunacharya? I always get their verses mixed up. He says, I spit at the thought when I think about my previous sexual dalliances. I spit at the idea. And he was a rich man and a king. So he wasn't going out and some back alley having sex with some AIDS-infested hooker, but he was having it in a palace or whatever, opulent surroundings. But he saw, this is disgusting. This, I spit at the thought when I think of that. Why? Because never, never rasadhana mujjitam rintam asit. Because I'm getting a taste at every moment in Krishna consciousness. How do you get there? Of course, how do you start on that? You have to get some gyan. We start with gyan and then we get big gyan. We have a lot of gyan in the Bhagavatam. Gyan in the sense of theory. We're hearing about it. Well, think about how, although how many tastes so far. Just like I was saying, you could tell an ordinary person, tell some young man in college how this is all illusion. You're looking and you're thinking this is just a bag of blood and bones and guts. But is he going to stop pursuing that just because I tell him that? Most likely not, right? It's not good. Even though it's knowledge, it's the fact, it's true, it's gone, there has to be something out. There has to be a pull from the other side. Sometimes I think Krishna pushes and he pulls from both sides. Or he kicks from behind and he pulls from the front. He attracts. And maybe Maya's doing the kicking from behind and Krishna's pulling from the front. So that pull has to be there. We have to feel the lure of Krishna, the attraction of Krishna. So we cultivate both things. We have theoretical knowledge. We have to put it into practice. We have to actually practice spiritual life. We have to start. We have to get a taste. So the Prabhupada was so insistent. Just get people to chant Hare Krishna. And reading now, I'm having a good time reading it. Shyama Sundar's book, when he goes, read it. It's great. He's really a good writer. And of course, it's an exciting story, where he came from and how he was right there from the beginning of the whole hippie thing, and all of that, and then he went there with Prabhupada, and now I'm in the section right now, I just met George Harrison. And George is so excited. You met me when you meet some person just soaking it up, and they're question after question after question. That's how George was. just sitting on the edge of his seat and just drinking it in, and he was just loving it. And of course, Shyama Sundar, he's just floating in the air, he's in a complete ecstasy. Okay. So, you can see, wow, here's somebody who's ready, because he's had everything. That's a lot of the great thing, you have an example like that. Anything he wanted, he could have had. He had so much money and fame, and women throwing themselves at, it was all the rock stars, it's a typical thing. But he's just fed up with it, disgusted. He's like this, disgusted with it. Okay, as soon as he met Shyama Sundar, there's a whole scene at Apple Studio, you read it in the book, but he goes straight, he comes out of the back room, and he goes, there's a whole room full of people, Hell's Angels are there, old friends of Shyama Sundar, and the devotees from Haight Ashbury, and the other three Beatles walk out first, and they just go out the door, and there's room. People just hanging around there. And then George walks out, goes straight across the room, because Shyama Sundar, who's sitting there, was dirty and shaped up, and so on. Sits down with him and starts talking to him, and immediately they hit it off like they're old friends, and they just, you know, yesterday they were together. And George says, I feel like I know you somehow. You know, maybe we're together, maybe we were brothers in our last life, he says. So it seems like maybe that was true. They had such an intimate connection. So right away, it was interesting to see that, how, you know, George had just said, I don't want to have anything to do with all this stuff. And of course, I had a lot to do with the whole breakup of the Beatles, because he was going one way, we were going another way. But that was the root of it, really, that he was just dissatisfied. He had everything, and he just wasn't satisfied. He knew there had to be something more. So that was a foundation, you know, the foundation from which he could build. And of course, he did, and he contributed so much. We're running an excerpt from the book and Back to Godhead coming up in a couple of issues. So it's a nice story to see that actually how it happened big time in somebody's life. Someone who had everything and just wasn't interested in it. Just wanted Krishna. He says there actually, in one minute, there's a meeting in his house. He calls the devotees up and said, come to my house. Come and see me. So he was there. He said, I got this new song. You want to hear it? Of course, the devotees are in ecstasy. Yeah. So he sings a song, Something. Something in the way she knows me. So I'm sure a lot of you know this song, Something, very famous song. So he says, she, in the song, he said, actually this is about Krishna. But I couldn't really say that, could I? He said. So he was, right away, had this attraction to Krishna. And the indifference to everything else around him. It was nice. Alright, so let's get into the story. We're going to continue with this tomorrow, more of the prayer of Pingala. Her self-realization beginning to flower here. Well, any Janashtami people?
I'm curious, I don't know if you know, but it seemed like George Harrison came to a certain point that he didn't keep going.
Yeah, I don't know George's whole history. You know, the world he lived in, it's very difficult. And he loved his music. He was into his music, so that was a big part of his life. And it does seem that he was somewhat eclectic, where he didn't, you know, discriminate about who he heard from and who he associated with and so on. But he did stay in touch with the devotees. McCormick was one of his lifelong friends. In fact, I hosted McCormick in my house, my wife and I. He visited some years ago. And McCormick said that actually, George told me that I'm one of his only friends. He told George so Mukunda Maharaj that. So he did, you know, he always had sympathy for the devotees. And, but, yeah, he didn't, like, move into an ashram or had a temple in his house and he chanted Hare Krishna, but he kind of mixed in other things. And, you know, it's hard to say. One thing is for sure is that, of course, Prabhupada gave him all his blessings and was so happy to see what he did. So, it's always hard to know what exactly the outcome would be, something like that. We might think, oh, he wasn't following all the regular principles and chanting 16 rounds and all these things, but who knows, right? Krishna, he can get Kripa Siddhi. Krishna can give him so much mercy. Or at least, you know, we have the confidence that Krishna sent him to another place. Maybe he didn't go back to Godhead, we don't know. But at least the Krishna's going to give him an opportunity to continue. It seems like he was already doing that, obviously. He was carried over from a previous life. So that was continued somehow or other. But I don't know that they know the whole details of his life. Well, you can read. Actually, Yogeshwar wrote a book about George. It's a really good book, actually. It's really nice and really exciting. There's a scene in there, I think we mentioned it in class one time, because Prabhupada hadn't seen George for a long time. George hadn't come to visit Prabhupada. Prabhupada was passing away and been dying. And at one point, Prabhupada took off one of his rings and he said, "Give this to George." So some of the devotees delivered it to him. It was a very touching scene in that book when you read that. Prabhupada is thinking of George at the very end. And he wanted to recognize him in some house, so he sent him one of his rings. Yes, I can tell you.
It's also, I don't know if it's the same book, but he never shows a book, I think it's called The Star of Surveys, about Krishna consciousness in England some years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was a nice scene in there at the last meeting.
Venture, right? Is that Venture?
Oh, was it? I thought it was Yogeshwar, but it was a book about Krishna consciousness in India, you know. And there's a nice scene in there. It was the last time that George Harrison physically met Srila Prabhupada, and he came to see him at the manor. And when he came in, Prabhupada began speaking with him. And one thing he mentioned to him, he said, "Just like you've given us this nice house that we're, you know, Krishna's being worshipped, we're living here. Similarly, Krishna is making you a nice place in Goloka Vrindavan." Prabhupada told him, "You're somebody face to face."
That was Yogeshwar's book, I guess. The Sun Also Rises. Not The Sun Also Rises. Here Comes the Sun.
Here Comes the Sun.
Here Comes the Sun was just one of his songs.
The Sun was in there. The proper person told him that the last meeting, so.
Krishna's building a place for him in Goloka.
Yes, I kind of felt like his position is pretty sure.
That's pretty nice. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, thank you. We were traveling in Europe for a little while. It was a gift, and we went to Amsterdam. And there, I guess you would say the local government, or people in general, they don't have an understanding of higher knowledge and how things are helpful or are hindrance to a spiritual life. So they try to legalize or accept things that are wrong, you know, like they legalize marijuana and prostitution, and they have set places that become taxable businesses, and
I think that's about dealing with the problem. There's a lot of arguments actually for legalizing drugs, because there's so much that goes on because they're not legal. So many murders go on, all the gangs, inner city gangs, and all kinds of things. So people do make arguments. It's better to have legalized prostitution and legalized drugs, and then you won't get all this other bad stuff that happens because it's not legal. So I think, you know, but the government is trying to face it in a practical way and see how it works. You know, of course, there are debates on all sides about what works and what doesn't work. But one thing that Prabhupada would always say, at least we know that these things are bad, and even the government knows, because that's why they try to regulate them in some way. The government gets involved in regulation. Of course, they also make money out of it. Prabhupada used to say, they take some distilled spirits, which Prabhupada knew how to make himself in the lab, but it costs a few paisa to make. And then they, you know, put a little food coloring in it or something, and a fancy bottle, and sell it for, whatever, 50 rupees a bottle or whatever. So then the government sells it. In the name of regulating it, and of course they make money off it, and they also tax it and so on. So there's, of course, it's all mixed up, mixed motives going on. But Prabhupada will make this point that they're regulating it because they know it's a bad thing. So that's why one reason why the government sometimes gets involved in these things also. Because, of course, ideally the government should be concerned about morals, people's morals. And, if they're actually leaders and they want to see a good society, they want to see morality in society. Of course, it makes their job easier too. They don't have to deal with so many bad elements in society. So ideally they should be trying to promote goodness in people. But we find today there's not so much concern for that. All right, we'll stop here. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.